This is the March 5 edition of Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Our panelists for the day include Corey Bratland of Kleist Commodities out of Willow Lake, South Dakota, Brian Stark of the Andersons from right here in Champaign County, Illinois, Mike Zuzolo from GlobalAnalytics.biz out of Atchison, Kansas, and Dan Zwicker at Zwicker Consulting from Waco, Texas. Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. You may find us and listen to us online at willag.org, that's willag.org, or look us up in your favorite podcast application. Let's begin, as usual, by getting a list of items we should discuss for the day. I think I'll start with you, Mike Zuzolo.
I think the thing that we saw on the corn panel at the Beef House All-Day Outlook meeting earlier this week, Todd, maybe needs to be opened up a little bit more in terms of the food versus fuel and whether the markets can distinguish between maybe the issue of demand maybe being a little bit better for the ag sector and the supply being a little bit more price friendly for the ag sector versus the commodity sector as a whole, like the energies and about, you know, all the negative mindset brewing as we get fresh updates from the GDP. So that and obviously next week's report, I think, are two of the big movers right now.
Dan Zwicker?
I don't know if I have a lot to add to it other than that we are seeing tremendous weakness in the dollar. We've had a pretty good last couple of weeks of decline. Looking at the technical side of the market, it looks like the dollar is vulnerable anyway to falling off the cliff. Kind of got a big monthly head and shoulders top on it. So that is maybe signaling dollar weakness, and how that may or may not impact export demand might be an issue.
Brian Stark of the Andersons.
I think we need to talk a little bit about basis and spreads and what the market signals are telling us from a fundamental standpoint regarding old crop grain movement.
And Corey Bratland.
Yeah, I'm just going to tee off on that as well. You know, talking about these upcoming acres report at the end of the month, stocks report at the end of the month, and just kind of some risk management ideas here going into, you know, what could be a very volatile, next 30 days here.
Under the category of three of these guys are kind of alike, and one of them is not. Three of them were at the All Day Ag Outlook, and they heard the basis and spreads discussion. So I want to hear from Corey Bratland before I get to everybody else. What you're thinking about basis and how that was able to manage its way through the end of February, and what did the spreads tell you about going forward?
Yeah, I mean, you look at the spreads and the way, you know, the March contract has really gained on the May, this bull spreading that's going on, I think is it kind of leans us to a little bit of a favorable position. At least it leans that way. Basis, for the most part, you know, has stayed fairly well. This inverse continues to roll forward. And, you know, as we get China back to, you know, trying to conduct business back to somewhat normal, you know, they got a ways to go yet. But I think, you know, if we can start getting some demand off the PNW will just help support this basis. But I think, you know, with the spreads firming up in here, taking this carry out, basis staying firm for the most part, I think, you know, it just kind of shows us that, you know, there might be a little bit of a concern of, you know, potential bushels out in the country of how many are still out there. And it really comes down to what kind of quality they're in, too.
So what kind of quality there in South Dakota? I would think you would be in a pretty rough area.
Yeah, we are. We got a lot of, you know, this low test weight corn. We've got one of our big co-ops in the state here. They're refusing to buy, or at least on for now, buying corn under 50-pound test weight, because the rumor is they've got upwards of, you know, 40 to 50 million bushels of corn that's under 50-pound test weight. And, you know, so it's a function of this lighter test weight that, you know, these bushels just aren't adding up. And we see a lot of this 52, 54-pound corn versus, you know, we're normally 56, 58, maybe some 60-pound corn. So, and this poor quality crop just isn't storing like it should, so as it never does.
Farmers have to be worried, I would think, because they'll need to do something with that corn.
Yeah, they will. We've been very, very proactive in telling these guys, you know, take advantage of the basis. You know, not many times we get to here in South Dakota to be selling some positive basis, and that's where we're at. You know, we got some ethanol plants at, you know, five over the May contract now, and so we're taking advantage of that, keeping the grain moving, keeping guys in some good cash positions, and then we're just managing the futures on the backside of it. But yeah, it, these poor quality crops, light test weight, high FM, there's a lot of that issues out there, and you know, we want to address the issue now versus later on this summer.
Hey, Brian, do you have any questions for Corey, given your background? I was thinking you might be able to plumb him just a bit better than I am at this point.
Sure, just a question, Corey. Are you seeing, given the light test weight, any movement from, say, Iowa or some of the other states that might not have been as quality challenged for blend capabilities of meat and specifications if you're exporting to the PNW market?
We are a little bit. You know, we did. I did hear here maybe a couple months ago there was some corn come in. You know, I'm guessing southern Minnesota, Iowa, somewhere in there that come into an ethanol plant in southeast South Dakota. And the issue is, you get up, you know, in the North Dakota, they're even worse yet. We got customers up there, and boy, the test weight has come up with the crop in the still standing in the field anyway, so on the farm stored bushels. But you know, it's, you know, a PNW spec for a number two yellow corn is, you know, 54 pounds. You know, and there's, I don't know what the discount is. It's 20 or so cents less bid, I think, for some good number three corn. But yeah, there is some, definitely some blending capabilities going on to some extent. But you know, the issue is it's hard logistically to get it where the good stuff is to where the poor quality stuff is to really make it worthwhile today.
I was just going to say, that's something we talked about this week at the Outlook meeting, that, you know, the propensity from where the Eastern Corn Belt is showing very firm basis, given the lack of moving stocks into the end user. Typically in the past, you might see if a basis level, you know, really appreciates, where there could be some potential ARB opportunity to move grain from the Western Corn Belt in there over Chicago. That might be a solution, but this year, given some of the poor test weight in the Dakotas, and having to potentially export some of that to the PNW market, you've got a real tight supply in the central part of the Corn Belt, so to speak, which led into the discussion of, you know, while basis feels like it's firm today, could be very firm as we get into the spring and the summertime.
Does everybody agree with that, Mike Cicillo?
Yeah, I mean, this is where it goes back to the NASS update for the resurvey, Todd. And, you know, it was nice of Lance to come and talk and clarify what his position is. And I've heard from two different NASS people in the last 5 days. And, you know, it's just not going to give the cash market enough time to get enough needs filled if we have to go all the way out to May, because I think we've just got done. And I wish the cash guys on the panel would correct me if I'm wrong, because I'd really like to know. But my sense from the clients I work with is the March either got rolled or they took the hit, and they need cash flow, and now they're secure through springtime and maybe even post-planting at this point, as far as farmers needing to sell anything for cash flow. And you know, the just absolute disgust with the markets and these continuous fundamentals that come across the news wires, like the COVID-19. And so I think the cash market is in a real pickle here if, like Dan's talking about, we are entering an inflationary bias in the dollar. And I think the crude oil is our biggest nemesis right now in the grain markets. But to get back to your point and your question is, there is a real difference between the cash market and the futures market right now. And I think the heart of that is because we go by USDA numbers in the futures market, and the USDA numbers say, put in a discount, put in a discount when you're looking at flat price. But these spreads are really waking up, and it's really refreshing to see soft red wheat at an inversion and holding that inversion.
Corey, just so you can come up to speed, WILL for 30 years has been holding a meeting at the Beef House with most of our regular on-air analysts. These three guys are among them. They were all there on Tuesday of this week, along with Lance Honig, the chief of the crops branch at USDA NASS. And essentially, Lance told us a couple of things that once he got back to Washington, D.C., he and the rest of the team probably were going to consider releasing and surveying South Dakota, Minnesota, Michigan, and Wisconsin potentially earlier than they would North Dakota, because they think North Dakota just won't get done as early, and trying to get those numbers out more quickly. And in that same time, he also said, remember that while the 8% of the crop was standing, it was just 8% of the crop, and it's on the fringe areas, and then you're only losing a portion of that 8% of the crop, so don't expect too much, was his note there. So I don't know whether farmers in your part of the world have been hearing that same kind of thing or not. I'm pretty sure he made that clear when he was at Commodity Classic as well last week, but I don't recall whether he was up front or not.
Yeah, that's kind of reassuring that they're going to come out and relook at these areas again, because they definitely need to. You know, like I say, we've still got South Dakota for the most part. We got our crop off. The North Dakota guys are still struggling, but I do agree with him. I mean, they're picking away at it. We're going to lose a percentage, but again, fringe areas. So is it going to be a big deal in the end? Probably not.
So Brian Stark, then tell me a little bit more about the whole of this conversation and the question that was asked, which was by Mike, which is, are farmers in a secure enough space now that they're probably not going to really need to move anything until after planting?
I think that's any type of move that you see now until after planting is logistically driven, quality driven. I think, to Mike's point, I agree that, you know, not only have you made your cash flow need sales, which reluctantly, you know, we just went through the March roll here a week or so ago. We saw some pricing reluctantly, so because they are frustrated. But the MFP payment, the third tranche that they received the beginning part of 2020, I think has also aided them and allowed them to stave off having to make any forced sales. And so once you get to the field and you plant, I think that adds even more upward pressure on the end user basis, trying to drive movement more so from the commercial hands to buy time until the producer decides to move the rest of his crop post-planting.
Dan Zbicker, you wanted to talk a bit more about the weakness in the dollar and the impact it has on the marketplace. What are you seeing?
Well, that's been one of our major hurdles, is that the rest of the country, or let's say the globe, you know, we've had negative interest rates and they've had weak currencies. They still have weak currencies, but now the dollar, you know, has been holding pretty firm here, except for the last couple of weeks now, with the decline in the stock market, the interest rate cut, worries about slowdown in the economy, and all this kind of stuff is now beginning to take a hold with a weaker dollar. And while it may not be good for the macro economy, a lot of times a weaker dollar is favorable to us that deal in real assets. And I'm talking about corn and soybeans and actually crude oil too. So that might be one of the factors as we look down the road, once we kind of get a handle or our arms around this coronavirus, how big an impact that really is going to have on our economy. And I'm not too sure when we'll get our arms around it, but the market is trying to get its arms around it. That those factors may all be positive influences as we look down the road, you know, into the summer and fall months.
So there are a couple of things from the all day, and Mike, I'll start with you on this. And Brian already talked about one of them, is that you've got both corn that needs to go east and west, which puts a lot of upward pressure, I suppose, in the middle, or a lot of pressure in the middle of the country to provide that corn, whether it comes from Iowa or parts of Illinois and other places that might have some decent corn around. The other thing that you mentioned, Mike, was, and we had some of this discussion, was what demand structure looks like maybe now and going forward. And this had to do with the meat complex and the 10-year numbers that USDA released during the Ag Forum. So their estimates showing just an unbelievable increase of red meat needs in China.
Yeah, and I would say it'd even shorten up into the 2021 time period and in 2020, if possibly, depending on how long coronavirus lasts, Todd, because the USDA ag economist, chief economist, made a big point about the shortfall in domestic production. They're going to need, even if we robbed everybody else of the world's pork imports, into other areas and shifted all of it over into China, that would be about 11 million tons this coming year. That would still provide about a 5 million ton shortfall. They'd have to make up with other protein. I think that the issue here with knowing weekly export sales, China was number two on our pork purchase list, number one on sorghum. Taiwan was number one on wheat. And I know I'm cherry picking. It wasn't all great news on the weekly export sales, but I guess it goes back to I see the weekly export sales for the meats and the grains, and then I see that three of the largest oil traders in the world are saying expect zero oil demand growth in 2020. And I wonder if these program funds can really differentiate out the food versus fuel, especially with China. And I'm getting more feedback out of China that there are issues of China being able to get planted this spring because of their transportation and the rural workers and the lack of job ability because of the lockdown that they've had for so long. So it doesn't look to me with certain provinces in China having almost $9 a pound pork, it doesn't look to me that the Chinese would want to hamper any kind of agriculture imports right now. And then that gets you back to the phase one issue. And we're right on the needle, we're right on the tip of the spear of this phase one taking effect. And I think it could do a lot of good for the demand, not just long term, but short term, if we'd actually start to see China kick into a high gear because their inflation's so high. It's almost 21% for their food inflation right now.
It probably comes back also, I would assume, to market year versus calendar year on some of these purchases, I would think.
Yeah, I think that's right. And, you know, there's still a lot of respected economists out there suggesting that we can put in a V bottom in terms of the GDP growth, in terms of taking a hit for one, maybe two quarters. But then by the late third, early fourth quarter, we're back on it as a whole. And that makes me feel better from the program algo funds. I still think we're not going to slip much on food exports, though, out of the United States, especially if we get a little bit of help from Argentina's weather and we get a little bit of help from some delayed plantings here in the United States. That factors into China's calculus of how much should they buy and how much should they get on the ocean, knowing what's going on in these two important countries.
So this commodity week, this program feels much better than things I've done in the last month and a half or 2 months. Last week and the week before were pretty rough. Even the Tuesday all-day ag outlook wasn't all that good, although I think a couple of things showed up there in terms of what producers might take away. So the acreage number at the end of the month, and we'll get to that in just a bit, appears to be a big gorilla that could hold the marketplace down. I think everybody's pretty worried that old crop needs to be sold sooner than later. At least that's the way it laid out for most of the day, Brian Stark, at the all-day ag outlook, but that there might be maybe some kind of good news further out. Am I getting this right, or are things turning more positive in the last couple of days than I expected?
No, I think you're right, Todd. I think there is some positive news, given what Mike said and others, that, you know, we could be seeing a temporary bottom. I can tell you end users as a whole have been living hand to mouth for the better part of a year and a half, if not longer. There's not much deferred coverage out there. Basis we've already discussed is very firm. I think there's definitely some potential upside. The one thing I caution, and I mentioned this Tuesday, is that we're looking and staring in the face today of around a 35-cent cash inverse between old crop and new crop. And what I mean by that is that the basis levels are paying you more through the summertime to deliver your old crop and then heavily discounting that to your new crop cash bids. So that's telling the producer that he needs to consider moving it, and if he's friendly to the market, even though I'm not a huge advocate of these, basis contracts may work in this type of environment, or you can simply sell the cash and replace it with some sort of option or futures ownership. But nonetheless, they needed to be taking advantage of these basis levels as they firm to move their old crop and mitigate that risk that they could be staring in their face of waiting too long as we get closer to harvest.
Dan, do you want to take the opposite side?
No. I mean, the only thing that year in and year out, and even last year, the odds of making the highs during June are very, very high. 50% of your highs are made during June, and so we are only early March here. So there is room to see seasonal price strength as we go on into the June timeframe. What factors that come into play to make that happen? But, you know, like last year, you know, if you would have sold June, and of course the news at that point in time was so scary, nobody could sell it. But that was the high of the year if you would have sold that mid-June high. And I guess I just want to play those odds. But I also know that people have to manage cash flow. They have to manage risk, and they got to manage quality. And this market could stay in a carrying charge market all the way, and you just keep rolling those basis contracts and keep buy and carry. My only observation of being a farmer advisory service guy for years and then working in the commercial grain trade, I mean, it's quite clear that until farmers release ownership of their grain, it's, the prices are not really going to go up. It's once the farmers remove their ability to take advantage of a rally is when the market takes off. So holding all these basis contracts tells me that the market is, you know, the market is getting its grain through basis contracts, and farmers are hanging on to the futures contract, hoping to get a rally. That's the way it's been since they started this. And now someday, you know, that could flip on a dime, and all of a sudden we get the July futures and it takes off like a rocket. You know, and it for those that can ride through the storm, they may end up, you know, having a nice position, but it could be some troubled waters. You know, I'm just really worried about between now and May 1st or until the next roll, where they got to force everybody to roll again in May. And then we'll see what happens.
Hey, Corey, in your area or the service area for you, geographically, was there a whole lot of prevent plant there?
Yeah, we did. We had, I think South Dakota, we were in excess of 3 million acres as a statewide here, so which is, you know, I think we were one of the largest states with the prevent plants. So
yeah, I knew that was the case. I was just checking to make sure that, and I was looking at the map at the same time. I was pretty sure you were in the middle of that. So the question then is, how much corn will producers plant this spring?
We're losing our snowpack right now, which is really good. It's getting smaller and smaller. We've had a really nice some weather here. So, I mean, if we can get back to a somewhat a normal spring, you know, where we can get in the field by, you know, get the corn planted, they're not going to make the mistake again, Todd, of planting this stuff into June. Okay, there, that was a one and done done deal. Lee's famous last words, anyways. But if we can get the stuff planted by 15th, 20th of May, you know, we will go back to planting as much corn as you know, we did the prior year. So, you know, you could be back up to, you know, I think it's about 5 million acres here in the state of South Dakota.
They'll just keep rolling if they can plant corn.
Yes.
And not plant soybeans.
Yep, correct. Yeah, with that spread ratio of 2.35 to 1 or 2.36 to 1, you know, on corn or new crop beans to corn ratio, you know, it still heavily favors corn, even in our neck of the woods. So, you know, guys, I think they've got a short memory in that they look at, you know, even our new crop basis levels are a little more attractive today than what they normally are. You know, we're seeing, you know, 10, 15 cents better than our normal historical basis levels. So I think guys will still chase that, even though if we do plant the acres, that basis does widen out for them down the road. So it's going to be a big management issue on our end this year. So
Mike Suzzolo, next Tuesday, USDA will update the World Agricultural Supply and Demand estimates. Is there any reason to think that the March report will show any more effect of phase one than the February did?
Not right now, I don't think, Todd. I think the USDA's tried to make that fairly clear that they don't see anything at this point in time changing, even though we went into the actual actual time period for this kicking into gear. But I think it's something to watch for. I think probably the biggest thing that I would bring up on the report next week is for the soybeans especially, I think we're really trading a kind of a negative supply side mindset. and it's really thwarting the rally potential because we've seen some good meal demand. We've seen good crush. We've seen export sales and meal really kick into gear. And we've seen Argentine weather come in and as well as an export tax hike. But none of this has done anything but create some lower lows. And I think the trade is simply now at this point pricing in a Brazil and Argentine crop number that is going to be between 180 to 183 million tons versus USDA's 178 for those two countries for soybean production. The lowest trade guess on the Reuters poll is 177. So it's essentially the last USDA number is the lowest number out there. So I think maybe we go into Tuesday's report with a kind of a sell the rumor, buy the fact. If USDA didn't throw any more new shocks at us on the supply side, there might be some short covering on the soybeans if that Argentine weather can clip the end of the corn, the end of the bean crop, which the USDA ag attaché noted when he raised the production today on his update, but said you've also got some issues with the second stage of mid-February and second crop soybeans. So that's something I'm kind of pinning down, trying to wait for the soybeans, not wanting to hedge here, wanting to see what the after effects of the report are.
But did that report include anything on corn?
I did not see any oil. I only saw an oilseed report from Argentina from the attaché, nothing from the grain side yet.
3 weeks of dry weather in Argentina, and they're, 45 days, I think, out from harvest there. The further north you go, of course, the longer out they are. And they're just in the middle of planting corn crop in Mato Grosso. Although I think, are they around 40% done? Is that right, Brian Stark, or thereabouts? I think that's the number I saw. So they're
I think that's right.
They're approaching halfway done. What do we know about that crop going in, and what worries do they have? It seems like it's getting planted a little later than usual.
It is, and I think obviously you get to a point in a week to 10 days, you start to get outside that optimal window from a production standpoint. So I think that the bigger elephant in the room is the Brazilian crop itself, and I think the Argentina issues I think will continue to support and maybe counterbalance each other moving forward. But the fact that the Brazilian real, I think we've talked a little bit about the weakness in the dollar, but the fact that it's down 15% since January 1st of this year also makes it really hard for us to be competitive on the world stage. And the fact that, we're the most efficient producer in the world, but yet maybe not the most cost effective, brings some challenges here long term as we try and figure out how to adapt and become more of a exporter and compete on the national stage again.
Okay, as we wrap up time here, I want to ask a quick question of everybody across the board, and I just kind of want a quick noted answer. On old crop corn, during the all-day ag outlook, mostly everybody said, probably ought to try to get most of it marketed by the 31st day of March. If you've got good corn, hold it in the bin, of course, if you can. Maybe some of those gambling stocks. Is that where you are on old crop corn? Yes or no? Corey Bratland.
Yes, we are.
Brian Stark?
Yes.
Mike?
Yes. 392, close above, wait to 405.
And Dan?
Let's buy corn. So I have to stay with that position. At least I want to maintain some kind of price ownership, though. I do want to have some kind of price ownership as we go into the summer.
The old contrarian came out in Dan, finally. It took a while, but the contrarian came out with him. Anybody else have a question for Corey before we get final words here from each of you? Maybe Mike Zuzlow.
I had a quick follow-up, Corey, on South Dakota, just to read you the did you figure that everything is pretty much out, even though USDA had 83% harvested in the middle of D's?
Yeah, when I travel around, there might be some up north as you get closer to the North Dakota border. There might be some sanded, but for the most part, I don't see any corn fields standing, no bean fields. I mean, for the most part, the crop is, in my eyes, is off. So
thank you.
Mike Zuzlow, your final word for the day.
I think to wrap up our conversation both this week, which you did a fantastic job, Todd. All the Will Radio people always do a great job. It's amazing how well you do each and every year. But I think from both this conversation and also Tuesday's conversation, I think we're still in a supply weather-driven market. You hedge rallies to cover yourself on profitability, especially given it's an election year. And then maybe as we get towards the middle part, later part of the year, calendar year, we look for a demand side driven market because of the dollar, because of the gold, because of the record 10-year yields, record low 10-year yields. These things may be creating some inflation in the market. And we've been in a sideways market for about 6 years at this point. So we should be attracting demand.
Dan Zwicker at Zwicker Consulting.
Corn's growing in Texas. It's up and growing, at least in the southern half of Texas. The people up in the northern part, it's wet, so it needs to dry out a little bit. But we're planting corn, and it's growing.
And Brian Stark, your final word?
I'll just reiterate, take advantage of uptick, strong basis in your local markets, and then look for price points on rallies to execute. We've struggled to stay above, trade through the 387 to 390 area on the May contract. We hit there yesterday and kind of backed off again today. So as you're looking to reduce some old crop length, I think those are some points that producers can consider selling.
Corey Bratland.
Yeah, just like the other guys have said, just you know, utilize this price protection in here, manage your risk, you know, until we get this coronavirus under control. I think, you know, the market's going to remain very uncertain. Market does not like uncertainties, so fight to quality. They're going to be a little hesitant, but again, down the road, we build this demand with this inflationary action that we're seeing here today. Down the road, I think it'd be give us some good upside. So I like the protection, but I do like to have some upside potential in my commodities.
Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. You may hear the whole of our program anytime you'd like on our website at WILLAG.org or look it up in one of your favorite podcast applications, including Stitcher, SoundCloud, the NPR One app on Google Play, and the Apple Podcast Store. Our thanks go this week to our panelists, including Corey Bratland of Kleist Commodities out of Willow Lake, South Dakota, Brian Stark of the Andersons from right here in Champaign County, Illinois, Mike Zuzlo from GlobalAnalytics.biz from Atchison, Kansas, and Dan Zwicker at Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.